When one too many gunzels takes a pot shot at ya. When four mad scientists try to take over the world all before happy hour. When you can't find your keys because you left them in an ancient forgotten world. Don't worry, you're not having a bad day. You've just been pulled. Pulled, the official podcast of New Pulp, hosted by Barry Reese, Derek Ferguson, Ron Fortier, and Tommy Hancock.
On the land, my only plan is to get away. I swam and hopped a freight, stole a Chevrolet. There ain't no way in hell they'll ever get me in that cell again. I picked the lock to get the guard and jumped the fence. I've been running night and day ever since. Hope I didn't leave any fingerprints in all the places I've been. The FBI is right behind, it's probably in the news. I bet my mugshot's underneath their lines, screen filling on the news. The sheriff should be bombed, search still to bruise. I think I lost the bombs back in Baton Rouge. Excuse me, I'm on the limb, I ain't got time to lose. Oh,
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. This one began when I bumped into a little old man who claimed he was dead and proved it.
And welcome once again to another special episode of Pulped. This is an episode devoted to a great new product from RadioArchives.com. We're talking once again about Night Beat Night Stories. And we have with us a guest we've had on before and the voice behind the audiobook for Night Beat Night Stories from Radio Archives, Michael C. Gwynn. Michael, how are you?
Well, I'm all right now. How about you?
Well, I'm doing well. Now, you've had a rough couple of 3 weeks where you live.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. I thought we were living in some third world country for a while. I was very fortunate. I'm just a little bit above Manhattan, but the storm was horrific. But there are still people without power. I mean, it was ghastly. And it still is for some people.
And then right after that, you got snow.
I lost power for 2 days, so I was okay.
And then after that, you got snow.
Yeah, we're getting beat up this time of the year more regularly now. I'm not a global warming advocate, but something about October seems to invite, maybe it's Halloween. We lost the last two Halloweens on account of snow, which is very weird.
That is odd.
Yeah, maybe the Mother Nature's had it with Halloween.
That's very possible. Now, let's talk about, now, of course, you've been doing audiobooks with Radio Archives, and you've got a couple out there, but the difference between the audiobooks you've been doing and the one we're talking about tonight is previous audiobooks and the ones you're going to continue to do are audiobooks of pulp magazine stories that were printed in the 30s and 40s. The difference is Night Beat Night Stories is an audiobook of brand new stories based on a old-time radio show. Now, if our listeners have paid attention before, they are very familiar with the fact that you're into old-time radio. So tell us a little bit about what you know about Night Beat the Show.
Well, Night Beat the Show is actually one of my favorite shows when I started collecting old radio shows back in Hollywood in the early 70s, actually. And I liked it because of the writing style and because of the great Frank Lovejoy, who played, what's his name, Randy Stone. Randy Stone, played by Frank Lovejoy. He had a very distinctive voice and a nice laid-back style, which he also carried over into his movie performances. So I was a big fan of it. The stories were tight. They were good. It was newspaper man as investigative reporter and going out on the road and solving problems and writing about it. It was a unique show. It was basically a guy who was a reporter telling you his story, and then at the end of every episode, he called Copy Boy, and the kid would come and pick it up, and it would be in the newspaper. It was a very unique show.
Well, But now, one of the things I really enjoy about the show, and I'm a huge fan, as I said in the introduction to the audiobook, I have been a fan since I was 8 years old, listening to a college station nearby. One of the great things about it is it's sort of a hybrid show. You've got this two-fisted, tough-as-nails type character that you know Randy Stone can be, and at times in the episodes is.
Right.
But there's a huge balance of human interest, too. I mean, some of the shows I can remember, you know, The Man Who Thought He Was Dead. Randy Stone has a day off and sits in the park beside a guy who is bundled up. It's the heat of the day, and he's bundled up in overcoats and all this, and he looks at Randy and says, "Come home and meet my family. I'm dead." And it goes from there.
I don't know that episode.
Yeah, the man who thought he was dead. And I mean, although there's some tension in it, there's actually a lot of dramatic tension in that. It's not the same as the episode Zero, where a nurse makes a mistake in a file and a man thinks he's going to die. So Randy and she have to find him before he tries to do something stupid.
I remember that one, right?
There's a lot of criminal stuff. There's a lot of tension. But then there are the shows that just have to do with humanity.
Right. I do remember them. He was in somebody's home helping a woman whose husband had disappeared. You're right. It was, as a newspaper man, it wasn't all the hard-boiled crime stuff. It was him being a good citizen, really.
Right. And yet, even saying that, Lovejoy's portrayal of Stone was so consistent. All aspects of the character, if you liked the hard-boiled stuff, and that's what you were listening for, you couldn't help but like the other stuff, because it was still the same guy. We weren't getting these two different portrayals. He was still the same guy. He just handled different things with the same set of tools.
Well, that was Frank Lovejoy's gift as an actor as well. In the movies, you would see him. He would play a cop, but he was a good guy. He had a quality about him that was understanding. He was a good listener. He was a good talker. And I suppose my favorite performance of his in the movies is with Humphrey Bogart in that great movie called In a Lonely Place. If you haven't seen that one, you really need to look at that one. He really was sort of Randy Stone in that one as well. He was a concerned friend of Bogart's troubled character. I mean, it's a great performance. I would love to have met the man. Sadly, he was gone by the time I got to Hollywood. But I'll never forget this. I suppose it was in the early 80s. I agreed to do a picture. I don't remember what it was now, but excuse me. I got a call from the producer and asked if I wanted to have a wardrobe consulting about the part, and would I like to have a hair person come over and do whatever I would want to do for this particular part. And I thought that was interesting, so I agreed, and this young lady showed up at my house in Hollywood Hills. And a very attractive young lady, and she started working on my hair. It was a character part, I guess. I had to have some special haircut. I don't recall now. But we got talking, and she said, "You know, my parents were in the business." And I said, "Really?" She said, "Yes." So my father was in. My mother and father were both actors. I don't know. You might remember them. Maybe you wouldn't. But I said, "Well, what's your father's name?" And she said, "Frank Lovejoy."
Wow.
Are you kidding? I said, and I've just forgotten her mom's name now, but she was a recognizable character actress as well. But I said, are you kidding? I not only know your father well, I have several radio shows in my house. Would you like to hear them? And she was knocked out. She didn't have copies of them, so I made her a couple of copies of her father's work on Nightbeat. It was quite a day.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. Well, and let's not undersell, you know, Lovejoy was a character voice on many shows. I was listening to one the other night where he's on a show with another actor who also shows up on shows that surprise people, but he was on Dragnet.
Oh, right.
And they, Joe and Frank are going to investigate a police shooting. And the policeman that survived at the interview, if you're a fan of Nightbeat at all, you know it's Frank Lovejoy.
And, oh, you can tell right away by that voice.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you know, you mentioned one of his movies. I think my favorite movie is actually the one, probably the only one that I'm aware of that he had that was successful and he had a starring role in and actually ended up having a radio series, although he didn't play the part. It was I Was a Communist for the FBI.
Oh, that's right. Dana Andrews, I think, ended up doing it on the radio.
Yep, but Lovejoy played Matt Savetic.
I did not know that. What you mean? So that's right. I do remember this movie now. I do remember, and I have a very bad copy of it. That's why I'd forgotten it for a moment. Yes, the Matt Savetic.
Right.
Wow.
Savetic wrote the book, supposedly, although it's rumored that it was ghostwritten, and they turned right around, and Lovejoy made the movie. And I want to say, I think this is one of those that even before the movie actually debuted, the radio show may have come out. I mean, but they were all real close together.
Well, he had a nice run there for a while. I miss actors of that quality on television or in the movies. You know, like real. They're simple. They're real. They come across with a solidity and an easy recognizability. We're always glad to see them in whatever they're doing. You know, nowadays I don't know. I get a few people on the screen that are interesting for a few moments and then they're gone. You never see them again. Or you get actors who are trying to be, you know, a little more than they need to be. It's just so, it's become such a sweaty business over the years now that the easy people, the easy on the eye, easy on the ear, and very focused and intent actors are the people I think that most people remember and recall.
Well, and, of course, I'm not close to the business at all, and you are, but my opinion as a fan is we don't really have a concept of a character actor anymore.
All right.
and that's definitely what Lovejoy was.
Yes, you bought him. Whatever he was doing, you bought him. There was never a question of, I don't know, is this guy really that guy? You know, there was a commitment. Most actors commit to a part by virtue of inhabiting it, I think is the phrase. That's bandied around a lot. He's inhabiting the character. So you end up buying a premise, even if it's a little far-fetched, because of the commitment the commitment and the solid nature of the quality of the acting. So those people, they don't seem to be trying to sell you anything or trying to make you believe something you don't quite believe. That's what I meant by sweaty. They're
right.
Too much working of a part. You know, it's funny you would say character actors, you know, because many years ago, when I was living in Hollywood, Jack Nicholson and I would run into each other from time to time, and he did something that, you know, Jack's career is really very interesting. He was around for many years doing really terrible movies, and he never really hit it. For years, he was struggling in the business, and he never really hit. And then when he hit big, I think after Chinatown, along came a film, I just do not remember the title now, where there was a Shirley MacLaine was in it, where Jack played a one-time astronaut. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, what Terms of Endearment?
Yes, I think so. Good one. That was, Jack got a hold of the script somehow and wanted to play the astronaut, the crazy guy next door, but they said, Jack, you're a headliner movie star. Your name goes above the title now. We can't possibly give you any billing. We can't possibly pay you in the money that you would normally get. The star roles are already taken. And Jack said, forget it. I'm a character actor. This is the part I want to do. And, of course, he stole the movie.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So I love that he defined himself as a character actor because that's what he always was. He came up the hard way through television where you get two shots at a take and that's it.
Well, and he.
So I love that.
Well, and he even in starring roles, he is one of those actors that, like you described Lovejoy, you feel comfortable with Nicholson.
Yeah. And you know he's going to bring something to the table you've never seen before.
Right. Exactly. Well, let's fast forward a few years. Let's fast forward to just a few months ago when you were involved with recording Night Beat Night Stories, the audiobook for this new series. First off, one of the things I want to talk about is how do you feel about new stories being written on old concepts, on established concepts? What's your opinion of that?
Well, that's a very good question. I suppose I was into reading the first story before I realized this isn't this isn't a transcript of a radio show. So I stopped recording and I read it a little further ahead, and then I checked into the idea that Tom had mentioned to me about what Radio Archives was doing, and I saw right away that these had been written with that show in mind, but not any part, ever part of that show. So it was a writing style. But the problem, oh, I don't want to say problem, the difference was that this is largely writing to be read. In other words, it was short story writing,
right,
with dialogue and descriptions that are very much like the standard pulp fare of writing, which is a very unique form of writing. The writing that is also unique involves writing for radio, which is a very, very, very special stylized kind of writing where you use a lot of descriptive words that you wouldn't normally write down to be read. So there were two different styles, and it took a little getting used to, because it was one of my first recordings for Radio Archives. I found myself having to do dialogue as well as be the narrator.
Right.
And I thought, I don't know if I can do this. I'm going to have to make a different voice. So I would be talking about going down a darkened alley after midnight as the rain fell gently, and then, "Hey, buddy, where are you going tonight? I got to do voices."
Yeah.
And I'll give it a shot. And then, of course, the tricky ones were when women would be speaking.
Right.
"Yes, I know, dear. It's so wonderful to see you again." I'm having to, and I thought, can I do this? I mean, I'd never done that before, so I'm hoping it worked out. Nobody's complained yet, so maybe it is an acceptable form of performing. But it's new to me, but it was fun doing it.
One of the things about the Nightbeat that makes it a little different is that even though you were having to go from narration to voices, just like Lovejoy did, one of the voices that you had to switch back and forth between were the same. I mean, the narrator is Randy Stone. So,
yeah.
One of the great things, and I've heard bits and pieces of what you've done already, and I don't think you have anything to worry about. I think
Good. Thank you. Just after what you just said now, I realized that Frank Lovejoy did do that,
yeah.
But he would go from a style of from narration to dialogue,
right,
rather than changing of the voice, and that was scaring me.
Yeah,
I had like four or five different people talking, so I'm acting at myself, if you will, back and forth between voices. I'm glad nobody's home when I'm doing this.
No, but you're not doing it in front of a window where people can walk by and watch. So
yes, exactly. Now I know why in my radio days they kept us in a dark room where they wouldn't let anybody in, because if you ever watched anybody doing those radio shows, you'd think they were crazy.
Well,
and in fact, we were.
It's funny you say that, because one of the writers for what you've read, Howard Hopkins, who has unfortunately passed away, but in one of his last emails to me, after he sent the story, he said, "You know, this is something I've never really written before. I really enjoyed it. I'm just glad no neighbors walked by when I was walking by in front of my window wearing a fedora and a trench coat while I wrote this."
Yes. Well, I'm sorry to hear that he's passed on, because I remember his stories, and I enjoyed it. It was certainly a leap into the unknown, and for that reason, I'm glad to hear you say you've heard some of it, and I hope whoever listens to this enjoy them as well, because it was a lot of fun doing. And the long-winded answer to your question was, it's really two forms of writing, two different styles, and I think they are both inherent in this product when you hear them and when you read them.
One of the things, speaking since, you know, I was the editor, but I was also one of the writers. And let me just tell you, it's a real honor to know that you read my story in this collection, too.
I remember your stories. Yes, I do.
But one of the things I kept in mind, and at the time I didn't know who was going to be reading it, but I was well aware it was going to be an audiobook. And because I was familiar with the radio show, now there were a couple of scenes where I had to throw in, and it was just necessary where there were more than one or two voices at a time. But I was very cognizant of the fact, okay, we want to portray that this is like the old-time radio show, but it's also a short story, like you said. So most of my scenes are two people. And because of the nature of the story, one of those people is always Randy Stone. And
yes, it makes it a lot easier for the narrator, for the reader, for the actor, and I think probably for the reader as well. You kept a very tight line, as I recall.
Well, and one of the things, and I'm sharing this with of course, not just a voice actor, but a fellow old-time radio enthusiast, I am a continuity nut. So the fact that there were two versions of the Nightbeat pilot, the elevator, in existence, and in one of them he's Lucky Stone, and in one of them he's Randy Stone, and they work for two different papers. I just had to resolve that.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. So they changed. They had a pilot, and then they did another pilot.
Right, and you can find both pilots are out there. The Lucky Stone.
Oh my goodness, Lucky! I'm glad they dropped Lucky.
Yeah, well, and if you remember, I dealt with that in my story. I didn't just drop him. I did something much more vicious to him. But. I reconciled that because it was sort for me anyway. It was sort of a continuity gaffe, but it was also a great opportunity to tell a story. And that's one of the things about Nightbeat is you go back to Lovejoy, and it's one of the reasons that I think, and I want your opinion on this, I think that these stories will work in a modern for a modern day audience because in a lot of ways they're universal. You could take Randy Stone. We didn't. We left him in the 50s, but you could take him and drop him in the 90s. You could drop him today. You could drop him in the future. You could drop him in the past. He's that sort of character, and the stories he encounters are just sort of universal in a sense.
Well, exactly. You just summed up exactly what, and also my opinion as well. It's a character who interacts with people. Stories are about people. Let's face it. That's why we sit in a dark room and watch people on a screen. We know it's not real, but it's up there. I think it's up there for us to learn from. I think it was Laurence Olivier who said, an actor is someone who teaches the human heart about itself. Mm-hmm. These are people up there saying other people's lines, other people's stories, and they're telling us stories, and we sit in a dark room and we deal with psychological problems and human problems in the dark without actually doing them. They help us, they guide us. They guide us in our behavior and our response to each other about love and hate and violence and peace, and all the great thematic things are done by storytellers and have been since we lived in caves. When one guy, I always like to envision this, in the caveman days, most of the men were large, brawny, hulky hunter types, but there was always one or two who were perhaps smaller and not really prone to hard work, and some resentment would build up against them for not contributing until night came, and the fires were lit, and the children were sitting around, and the storytellers began to talk, and the musicians began to play, and the big guy said, let's keep these guys around for a while. We still do that. We go and look at unique people on stage or on the screen to tell us about ourselves. And good story writing, gee whiz, Tommy, that's the essence of real education. I mean, that learning about ourselves, learning about our behavior. We go to movies to see things blow up and everything like that. That's fine. Eyeball candy, we call it. But there has to be a story. And Randy Stone told stories.
Right.
And thanks to you and Tom Brown and the people at Radio Archives, we have another outlet for stories. I mean, you're right. It doesn't matter. They go on forever in any time zone.
Exactly. That's right.
Yesterday, tomorrow, today, it all works if you've got a tale to tell, a tale well calculated.
And lots, you know, when you look at doing something like what Radio Archives has done, part of the process, of course, you have to look at is, okay, will people be interested in that sort of thing? But one of the things that has me invested in this project, and because I do, in my publishing company, we do a lot of new stories with old pulp characters. You know, we bring some of the public domain characters back. And I don't do that because it makes me a ton of money. I do that because those characters, I feel, still have stories to tell. That's the usefulness.
Very good, very good. You just put some new wine in the old bottles.
That's it. That's exactly it. And you helped us do that with this collection, so I really appreciate that.
Well, I'm very honored to be part of it, I have to tell you. It's like a dream. No, it's not even a dream. It's something I would never have even dreamt possible in my years on the stage and on screen, and quietly at home listening to my radio shows and being thrilled that my son, who was then 9 and 10 years old, would bring his friends home from school after school, and they would say, can we listen to one of those radio shows? They had a TV in the room. They could have done anything. They could have been outside playing. They wanted to hear those shows, and I thought, that's remarkable. How, so it's not just my nostalgia. It is something still wonderfully magical and inherent in them. I mean, when I first started collecting them, I thought, this will be fun to hear Inner Sanctum again, and I put it on. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. This actually is freeing me up. I can do the dishes. I can start cooking dinner. I can do things, but I can still be part of this show. And that freed me up from having to sit in front of a TV screen and just watch things and sit there passively. Radio keeps you, it works. I don't even have the word for it. It works in a multidimensional way, but you can also do other things and still be taken on a wonderful journey.
Right, exactly. And it was really neat to hear you tell a story you just did about your son, because I'm going through that with my kids. Yeah, they'll come in and they've been playing their video games or whatever, and one of them will say, hey, there's this thing my dad listens to, and he's got these CDs, and they'll come in, and I'll have to put them in the player and let them listen to them.
It's wonderful.
Or they'll pull down my pulp magazines or whatever, and they're still...
I know, my son is now along in years, but when he comes to visit, he lives in near Providence, Rhode Island now, in Lovecraft territory. Mm-hmm. When he comes over, he still goes through my collection of Weird Tales magazines. He wants to thumb them and feel the yellow pulping paper, and it's tactile as well as interesting. It's a time warp in a way. And he still has a reverence for them. So that has to be the essence of what magic is, because it's certainly not of his era. And when I collected them, I was a teenager, they weren't even of my era. They were gone by the time I found them. Right. So it must be something else in there about this kind of storytelling. And I'm really thankful to you guys for bringing them back out. There must be a huge audience of people who don't know about these things yet. So exactly. In some ways, I'm honored to be part of something that gets it out there.
Exactly. My 12-year-old last year, they had some sort of assignment where they were listing about fictional characters, and they had to list their favorite whatever. And his favorite detective. And the teacher came to him and told him he was making it up. So he had to come home, and it was Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yours truly.
And he wrote, that's what he wrote. He wrote, yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And he tried to explain it to her. And she said, no, you're making that up. And so he had to come home. And of course, I go with him the next day and take a stack of CDs with me.
Well done. Very good. Well, it's that kind of doubt and cynicism that can be fought, the good fight, by bringing the magic out of the trunk.
Right.
So you went to a school and enlightened this young lady,
I sure did. I wanted
well
to,
done.
Yeah, because, you know, but that comes from him being around me and listening, you know, all of them listening to me. His favorite superhero, and the only reason she even marked this one off was because she thought he meant someone else. His favorite superhero was the Black Bat.
Oh, so she thought he was thinking about Batman.
That's right, yeah. And while I was there, I explained, no, you need to know who the Black Bat is also.
You got to educate those educators.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, they don't know a lot of that stuff either. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to hear something like that because, you know, what have we done to our kids?
Right.
My son also come back from school saying, these kids, they don't know anything about the Inner Sanctum shows. They don't know who the Superman was. They missed all of that stuff. I feel badly for them sometimes. They grew up with television. They're used to staring at a screen. They barely look at each other anymore, but it seems the magic is lost.
Yeah. You know, my kids go to school talking about Dick Tracy newspaper strips.
I remember those.
And because we've got the collections, and some of their friends say they don't put comic strips in newspapers. I mean, they're not even picking the things up anymore.
But
at least in my house, it's a good thing.
In my house too, sir. Yeah. And a growing number of houses, I think. Anybody who's listening to your show and listening to us at this very moment will hopefully get some friends involved and show them this little magic trunk filled with wonderful things.
And another thing is that I see so many times when they talk about movies and stuff that are coming out now, they say, when they interviewed the creator, you know, the influence for this was X, Y, and Z. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, yeah, but whatever influenced X, Y, and Z, that guy also listened to Nightbeat, or he listened to Inner Sanctum, or he listened to something else, because.
Yes, there's the continuity you're talking about.
Yeah.
And there's a big gap in a lot of people's idea of where a lot of these great stories came from. And, you know, I think we've helped uncover some of the origins in the human spirit where let's face it, we love stories. We love people. I've got grandchildren now who won't go to sleep unless I make up some wacky story in the middle of the night.
Right,
which I'm good at, and I still remember doing that. And I don't know, man. I just think it's wonderful stuff. It's magical stuff.
Well, and I'm really glad that you were a part of Nightbeat Night Story, so thank you for doing that with us.
Well, let's hope we can do some more. I mean, onwards with the magic show. We're not even selling snake oil, and people are showing up.
Exactly. Well, Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Tommy, and we will talk again in the future, no doubt.
And we will, and this is Tommy Hancock, and you've just been...
pulled.
Copy, boy.
Ain't gonna give nobody none of my jelly rolls. I wouldn't give you a piece of this cake to save your soul.
Oh, come on, man.
My mom told me today, before she went away, to be a good boy, she'd bring me a toy. I'm my mama's pride and joy. Now there ain't no use for you to keep on hanging round. I love you, but I've got to let you down. My jelly roll is sweet, it's really hard to beat. I know you want it, but you can't have it, cause I ain't gonna give you none. Come on!
Hulk, the official New Pulp podcast, is copyright 2011. All views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals expressing them and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Pulp. All music featured on this podcast is either in the public domain or is being used under an appropriate Creative Commons license. The opening theme, On the Lamb, and closing theme, I Ain't Gonna Give Nobody None of This Jelly Roll, were recorded and performed by the Red Hook Ramblers. Check out New Pulp at www.newpulpfiction.com and like New Pulp on Facebook.
All music used in production of commercials for Pulped in this episode, created and performed by Kevin MacLeod, www.incomputech.com, copyright Kevin MacLeod, and used under a Creative Commons license.